Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is the Herd. Wherever you may be listening, however you may making us part of your day. What's that Colin always says? I'm Doug Gottlieb, in for Colin Cowherd all week, alongside the lovely, talented, and prepared Joy Taylor. How are you, Joy?
Morning. Wherever you may be, wherever you may be listening.
I actually purposely...
You purposely mess it up?
Yeah, just... I kind of do that sort of thing. But that's okay. I like that you're actually listening enough. Were you watching yesterday afternoon?
Tiger?
Yes.
I mean, he's back, right?
No, that wasn't my question.
By not answering
the question, you're answering the question.
No, I don't. When he's back is when I'm going to be watching, if I'm keeping it real.
What do you mean when he's back?
He got second. He was runner up. Did he win?
Look, I'm going to credit a friend of mine, Kyle Porter, who works for CBSSports.com with this tweet. Tiger Woods wins the 2018 PGA Championship with a score of 14 under. Brooks Koepka finishes second with a score of 16 under.
Right.
That's what happened yesterday.
Yes, that's what it feels like.
That's not what it feels like. That's what happened.
It's a bummer for Koepka, for sure.
Look, there's a certain Shooter McGavin aspect to it, you know, from Happy Gilmore. I was too busy winning the tournament to pay attention to what Happy was doing off the tee.
Right.
Right? And I do feel like maybe we should
give... Which is a bit of an insult to Tiger, in a weird way.
But Tiger won yesterday. Have perspective on this, okay? Because whether it was the man who normally sits in this chair, many of the men and women who have sat in your chair or on that couch, or all of the yakkers on TV, the tweeters out there, many who profess to know and have forgotten more about golf than we will ever know said he was done. What's he doing? He's a joke. He's finished. Give it up. Just go be a dad. Find another wife. Find another life. Move on because it is over. You're finished. And even as the comeback started to mount, the narrative was Saturday and Sunday, can't do it. But his scores actually progressively got better. He shot a 64 yesterday and couldn't hit the fairway on the front nine. Like, that was a remarkable round of golf. Look, I don't geek out about golf. Do I play golf? Yes. Okay. Am I good at golf? No. What's my handicap? Golf generally is my handicap. But I can tell you that anyone with a brain can understand that if you don't hit a fairway on the front nine and you're still scoring well, you're doing something that... There's a parallel to what Tiger Woods was able to do on the front nine to what he's been able to do with his life. His life was a mess. Listen, can we take into account the fact that he cheated on his wife multiple times, now ex-wife multiple times? Yes. Is that a factor? Sure. But there was also multiple knee operations. He tore his Achilles tendon. He's had four back surgeries. Four. He went through multiple swing coaches to now where he's coaching himself. He had the chipping yips a year ago, okay? A year and a half ago, he had a DUI. Hell, you go back to February, he didn't make the cut at Riviera right down the road here. And he said he had to figure himself out. And people said, Tiger, we figured you out. It's over. And yet, he owned Sunday. No, he did not raise the Wanamaker Trophy. He did not. He's like the guy who creates monsters now having to fight these monsters. Brooks Koepka, who has taken Tiger's idea of athletes building their bodies up to drive a golf ball 340 yards and has done just that and using the fact that he's 28 years old. And Brooks Koepka had to play out of his mind to hold off Tiger Woods, in which he started the day with a four-shot lead. What we saw yesterday didn't... Tiger Woods is never going to be back to what he was in his late 20s and early 30s. None of us who are in our 40s are ever going to be that guy. We're just not. But Tiger Woods owned golf, owned sports yesterday. Tiger completed the comeback and completed any sort of argument to whether or not he's the greatest golfer ever. Because you don't actually have to win a trophy to win the day. Think about this. The number of times Tiger Woods has had to score 10 under or better to win a major championship is 11. Jack Nicklaus, of course, owns the record for 18 major titles. Only twice. Tiger's had to compete against tougher courses, better competition. Yes, he has better technology and his body is built up, but let's be honest. The idea that Tiger's not better than Jack is kind of laughable, right? It's the same argument that Steve Kerr makes about athletes. Like, athletes now are going to be better than they were previously. They just are. Yesterday, he showed shot creativity. He continued to prove to us why he's the best iron player in the history of the game. And though he did not make every putt, I mean, look, the real reason he lost or wasn't able to win was because Saturday he missed 3, 4, maybe even 5 makeable putts. He missed a couple yesterday as well. But considering where he was to how he played and how he finished, to turn a world of haters, a world of people who made fun of the downfall, into a world of supporters, I don't know how you would quantify whether or not he's back. I think he won yesterday. I think everybody feels that way. And I think he cemented himself as the greatest golfer we have ever seen because he's having to overcome now an entirely new generation of players who only got into the sport because Tiger made it cool to get into the sport and get into shape and be an athlete while playing the sport that has never been determined to be an athletic event. Like Eldrick Tiger Woods, who, look, there are many things that people say golfers have an upper hand on, right? It's a country club sport. It eliminates at least half, if not probably three quarters of the potential athletes out there to compete against. But Tiger did not come with a silver spoon in his mouth. And yet at 3 years old, 4 years old, we were told he was going to be the next thing and he lived up to it. And then like so many, this is a tale as old as time. He succumbed to all the trappings of fame, all of it. Arrogance, stepping out on his marriage, the idea that he didn't want to, you know, perform under the norms of the general golf population, right? Cursing on a golf course, how he would react. You watch Tiger Woods and how he walked into the golf course yesterday. That was a man who won the day. Hat on backwards. No, Colin would not approve of him being a franchise quarterback. Hat on backwards, sunglasses on, chest out, cardinal red shirt. He owns St. Louis. He saved a sport single-handedly. Golf was going the way, frankly, of NASCAR. Of being a sport to which, you know, in the 90s and early 2000s, we were super into. And now we're like, eh. I understand how popular it is in different regions of the country and in different places, but it does feel like it jumped the shark a little bit. Tiger saved it yesterday. To the point where, I don't know if you're like this, here's how good Tiger is. Here's how good TV was yesterday. Over 240 days until the Masters next year. That's a bummer, isn't it? Right? Because you want it to be this next weekend or the weekend after that. Next year, you got the Masters, Bethpage Black, and Pebble Beach. Those are the three majors played on our soil. Pebble, where he won by 15 strokes. The Masters, where he could play blind. Matter of fact, after the car accident, after the breakdown with Elon, he still finished in fourth place the very next Masters. And Bethpage Black, which is just outside of New York City, which, of course, will be like a home game. There are so many parts of this story which are so incredible. The idea that he went from being a polarizing guy that many people in the sport disliked and people out of the sport had disdain for, to where I almost found myself rooting against Brooks Koepka, right? He gets up there on 17, a par 5, which you know he's going to be on the green in 2, and you're thinking, just hit it in the woods. Hit a fan. Put it in the drink. You almost wish that he snapped his club on his backswing. Tell me I'm lying. Well, you were suddenly rooting it, and there's nothing wrong with Brooks Koepka. Brooks Koepka. whatever his name is, whoever raised the Wanamaker Trophy. I know who Brooks Koepka is. He's won 3 majors of the last 6 that he's been in, 7 overall. He's won 3 out of 7, 3 of the last 6 that he's been in. And yet, most of America, if not all of America, was suddenly turning against our own just because of Tiger Woods. Changing our view of a sport. Coming back from something that most thought you could never come back from. Performing better on a Sunday than he had on a Saturday, better than he had on Thursday, better than he had on Friday. To me, Tiger Woods put himself down as, I'm the best that's ever done it. He appeared humble. He appeared gracious. He appeared to understand the gravity of the comeback. And whether or not you think that's real or fake, don't tell me you weren't in yesterday. You don't think Tiger's back, Joy?
I think I would argue the golf won yesterday more than Tiger.
He didn't.
Because he didn't literally win, and it feels like he won, right?
Yes.
So the ratings were up 69%
yes.
from last year.
Yes. Rob Gronkowski's favorite rise in yes, golf ratings yes. ever.
Gronk's yes. favorite rating, yes. yes. They did an 8.3 on Sunday. So golf won yesterday. But I would argue that this is more of a moral victory. And in order for this to be sustainable, to say Tiger's back and Tiger's winning again, he's going to have to actually win, which I'm very much rooting for.
Right.
I've never been out on Tiger from the very beginning of everything.
Right.
I despise the turning that we do on not only just athletes, just anyone who has
this is kind of what we do,
right? We build you up to tear you down,
yes.
and then we
root for the comeback.
Rise again. Like, you didn't actually have to tear them down in the first place.
Well, listen, this is a deeper dive that I want to get into.
Sure. But the point is I've never been against Tiger coming back or being great. I think the whole entire sports world needs Tiger to be great, not just golf. But I think actual winning has to happen before that's the case.
I do think that there are some people, and look, there are some things about him to which, I don't know if he deserved to be torn down, but we all deserve to be humbled on some level, right? To understand our mortality as human beings, there is a way to treat people. And it's not just him. There are others that have seen. But I actually believe his comeback is real. Like, there's something to of the fact that when he takes off that hat, you can see he's balding underneath. That as much as he's still an athlete, there's still a little bit of a 40-year-old pouch there.
It's this.
Like
it's
I actually, this, it, I like
human
that.
Human desire to see some sort of relatable characteristic in people that are so much greater than us at any particular thing, right? Like, he's so far above and beyond, not even just as a golfer in general, but just as a figure and as a legend, that once we start to see some mortality, that's what it is. That's why people tore him down. Like, oh, you're not really as great as you are.
I'm not using that to tear him down. I'm using that to, I actually think that elevates him. I think that the scars that we have, like, I'm an anti-Botox guy, right? Like, I'm an anti-hair replacement guy. Like, the scars that you have from your life are what make you special as a human being. And all of this other stuff, the winning by 15 at Pebble and all of the early success, the death of his dad, the downfall of his
marriage. That makes his story unique.
It's an incredible journey. And to me, I see a guy who's from the same area of the country, the same exact part of the country I'm from, at the exact same age I am, and when I see him get back to the level that so many said he would never get back to, like, I find myself rooting even more for it when I see him take off his hat and go, like, yeah, the dude, he doesn't have all his hair. Guess what? Most of us don't.
Because you know what he's overcome to get there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's talk about some of these young quarterbacks and our reaction and overreaction to week one of the preseason being in the bank. Greg Jennings, of course, an analyst for the NFL on Fox and Fox Sports 1, 10 seasons in the NFL, Super Bowl champion, 2-time Pro Bowler, all-around good dude. Before we get to football, how much golf did you watch this weekend?
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
I found myself watching an uncomfortable amount of football and golf this weekend. Like, man, where did the time go? I just watched a lot of both.
Yeah. It was fun. It was a good
interesting filled sports weekend with football being back in the fold. And obviously Tiger, what he was doing, he just glues you to every set. That it doesn't matter where you are. I was in a restaurant and they didn't have it up right away. I mean, he wasn't even teeing off yet, but I'm like, I got my phone on the table and I'm like, are you guys going to put it up?
I don't understand these people who are so completely who run restaurants who are completely unaware. My high school coach and two of my close friends, they were. I was with a buddy of mine, Spiro Ditas, who called the Charger game, and we're having lunch. And then my other buddies are up at BJ's, which is, you know, it's got all these TVs and whatever. And I was like, I'll shoot up there. Do you guys have golf on? He's like, no. Should we tell him to put it on? I was like,
yeah.
Meanwhile, I'm driving. I got it on my phone. I'm driving, yep. keeping tabs on. Greg Jennings joins us. Is there a most impressive of this young quarterback class 1 week of the preseason in the bank?
Most impressive?
Yep.
I would say Baker Mayfield. For me, I think when I look at Baker Mayfield, he's in the best situation. He has the best talent around him. Receivers, offensive line, group of running backs, and a quarterback that he's probably going to sit behind who knows for how long. I look at Josh Rosen in his situation being behind Sam Bradford. He's going to play. They have poor offensive line play. And I don't like to speak someone getting hurt. I don't want to see Sam Bradford.
No, listen, I actually like Sam Bradford. People hold it against him, and he got $50 million guaranteed out of college. Like, look, dude, that was just the game at the time. That's not his fault, right? But it's not a question of if, it's a question of when Bradford is too banged up to play,
yeah,
correct?
He's fragile. He's not mobile. So if you have poor offensive line play, you have a quarterback who's not mobile, who has a history of being injured, the likelihood of Josh Rosen playing, very high.
Right.
I don't like...
Now, he's got better skill position guys around him than the Browns do, dude. He's got David Johnson. He's got Larry Fitzgerald.
So that's two.
Right.
That's two. I'm saying complete, Baker Mayfield has a better situation. Josh Rosen has Larry Fitzgerald, who's obviously first ballot Hall of Famer, and then you have the best running back out of all the young quarterbacks that you could possibly have in a David Johnson. But how effective will their running game be?
Sure.
Because their offensive line is, their play is poor. So, I mean, yeah, you have a safety net there. Sam Darnold?
Yep.
I feel for the guy because, I don't know anyone on the Jets roster. I mean, I should know someone at...
You're probably going to be doing a Jets game later this year for Fox, like, too. I know you're doing games this year. Yeah. I
got to
bone up
that.
A little bit.
I should kind of know that. And yes. I think that his situation, him being behind Josh McCown, he's going to eventually play, I believe, as well. I just think that Baker Mayfield is in the best situation. He showed us a little bit, and he was already in an exciting situation, but he has nothing to, his threshold, his floor is in the basement. Like, they won zero games.
Right.
So Baker Mayfield, whatever he does is a success.
I saw this online today. We're getting ready. We're in our meeting. And Ryan Music, who's my producer on the Doug Gottlieb Show, which follows the show on Fox Sports Radio, 12 to 3 Pacific, 3 to 6 Eastern time, he pointed out to me, he's like, hey, have you seen this line that Vegas now ranks the Packers, one of your former teams, the Packers, as the favorite to land Khalil Mack before the season is up? And I was like, wow. And it's one of those things to which, wait, we double-checked it, we triple-checked it, and it is in fact. So how does this work that we went from John Gruden not having conversation with Khalil Mack, Khalil Mack not playing the first preseason game, to Vegas believing there's a better chance that he plays for the Packers this year than he plays for the Raiders?
Well, when I first heard it, I was kind of like you, like, what? But then the more I sit back and I analyze everything, you got Reggie McKenzie, who was
former Packer guy
at the general manager position out in Oakland. If they can't get something done, you're looking at a Green Bay Packer team that obviously needs a pass rusher. I mean, they use Clay Matthews everywhere. Nick Perry is kind of, he's healthy one minute, he injured the next. They need a pass rusher that can put pressure on the quarterback every single down. And Khalil Mack, obviously, he gives you that. The likelihood of it happening, I don't know that. But I could see where the talk has kind of been created because of the relationships there and the inquiring of, hey, what's going on with Khalil Mack, from the Packers front office to the Oakland Raiders front office, because they do have relations. Jordy just went from the Green Bay Packers to the Oakland Raiders. So, I mean, general managers, they talk, especially when they come from a winning organization or a familiar place that has had success. And we pretty much like to draft similar guys.
Right.
I could see that being why they would be tops the list. But you can't get rid of Khalil Mack.
What team will Khalil Mack be on at the end of October? This is from Odd Shark. Packers at plus 300, Raiders at plus 400, and the Jets, of course, have a ton of cap space at plus 700, Bills at plus 700, so are the Redskins as well. Let me ask you about the helmet rule, the new helmet rule. Again, we're only 1 week in all these preseason games, mm-hmm. with plus the Hall of Fame game. What's your reaction to how it's being used?
I get what the league is trying to do. I don't per se care for the new helmet rule. And again, I understand the safety reasons why. But when I look at a guy leading with a helmet, you tell me a guy that can make a tackle and throw their shoulder and their head doesn't go with it. Like, it's going to happen. And when we were at the seminar for Fox, you know, we had the refs come in and they were telling us about this new rule and how it was going to impact and affect the game. And I just don't see it being clear across the board, called consistently. I think that is where the problem will arise, because you're talking about, they're going to call, or they're supposed to call, any contact with the crown of the head.
Correct.
On a, whether you're an offensive guy or a defensive guy, that is now a penalty.
Okay, but listen, I could play this.
Offensive linemen, they cut block. You got running backs who cut block.
I understand that right now it's like when they took hand checking out of the NBA. Early on, it was a complete disaster. Everybody complained about it. And then slowly but surely, they figured it out. What, they don't want another Ryan Shazier. That's what we don't want. We don't want one of our star players being carted off the field and now walking on crutches, not being able to walk or run fluidly. We don't want that. So I understand that right now it's a shock to the system, that it's going to screw up a drive. It's going to screw up a game. Hell, it may screw up the season. But the risk in staying with the status quo is the status quo. And Ryan Shazier was basically paralyzed, mm-hmm. and he's recovering from it based on lowering his helmet and hitting the crown, using the crown of his helmet to make a tackle last year on a Thursday night. And I think that's what the league is reacting, maybe overreacting to, but it's a good thing to overreact to.
Yeah, I mean, I would never say that they're overreacting, because it's a safety issue. And we've seen it doesn't matter. Any rule that's been put into place, when it's regarding safety, it has never been rescinded. You've never gone back and said, okay, we're going to put a seatbelt in the car, and now that the cars are made better and more,
we're going to take the seatbelt thing out?
We're going to take that just doesn't happen.
Yes, but the point is, when the seatbelt law first came into existence, there were people like, well, what happens when you're submerged? When you like, okay, well, if you go off a bridge and you don't have a seatbelt on, you're not going to be in the car to be submerged. So, I agree with you that they're never going to take it away, but I do think they're going to adjust some of how they look at this rule. It's going to be fascinating to see.
What's up, everybody? This is John Middlecoff on the 3 and Out podcast, brought to you by Colin Cowherd's Podcast Network. If you like Colin's show, you will like my podcast. I talk a ton of football. This week, I talk Baker Mayfield, I talk the Khalil Mack situation, and I talk about what's important for NFL front offices during the preseason. Again, you can find me wherever you listen to podcasts. 3 and Out with John Middlecoff on the Herd's Podcast Network.
What is an underdog? What is an underdog? How would you characterize an underdog? I wasn't bored during the break, but I did look it up. Just so you know, we're aware, a competitor thought to have little chance of winning a fight or a contest. Right? That's the underdog. So I look at the Cleveland Browns situation, and for the record, Colin and I have, he asked me this Thursday on the show when I was down at Charger camp, my thoughts on Baker Mayfield. And I said, look, I think you got a little bit wrong that though he carries himself with a certain amount of confidence bordering on arrogance, unlike others that are perceived that way, he was beloved in his Sooner locker room. Beloved. Like, yeah, he's kind of cock of the walk sort of guy. But he was beloved as a leader. He's got a high football IQ. The questions about Baker Mayfield would be, how would he perform when he doesn't have elite talent around him? Right? Can you lift a franchise up the way that Andrew Luck had to his first 3 years with the Colts? Remember, though he was at Texas Tech as a freshman walk-on and he got a chance to start, when you play at Texas Tech, you're playing with one of the best offensive minds in the entire sport, Cliff Kingsbury. Don't believe me? Look at the numbers he put up. Look at the numbers Davis Webb put up. Look at the numbers Pat Mahomes put up. Look at the numbers every quarterback they've had to put up. The issue at Texas Tech has never been quarterback play, ever. This year it might be because they have a couple to choose from. Then he goes to Oklahoma, and he's surrounded by the best talent in the league. Oklahoma has better players than 95% of the teams that they play against. And he's been coached by Lincoln Riley, who, from that same mold, one of the elite play callers, offensive minds in the entire business. What happens when you go to the Cleveland Browns or to any organization in the NFL where you don't have elite level talent? Jarvis Landry is that type of talent, but they don't have Josh Gordon. There's a lot of question marks about the rest of the team. So I'm not negative on Baker Mayfield, but the evaluation of Baker Mayfield is a little bit small, not as athletic as people think. Though he's accurate, how strong is his arm? How good is his ability to play? He's just not rated out as good a prospect as a Sam Darnold or maybe a Josh Rosen, and by some, a Josh Allen, a bigger, better deep ball thrower, even if he's not as accurate. But he's got a super high football IQ. But let me tell you two different stories, and you tell me who the underdog is. Okay? One quarterback is as decorated a quarterback to enter the National Football League as we've ever had. He was a finalist for the Heisman Trophy 3 times. He won the Heisman Trophy once. He played in the college football playoff 2 different times. He played at a historically great university for football under an incredible longtime head coach and a profound play caller. He was the number one overall pick in the NFL draft. That's one quarterback. The other quarterback was a 6th-round draft pick, also smaller than the other quarterback, but not even 6 feet tall. He's on his 3rd team. His last team, he led to the playoffs after the longest drought in the National Football League. They tried to bench him last year, and the rookie threw 5 interceptions in the first half, and there was nearly a mutiny at the hands of the coach. And even after leading his previous team to the playoffs, they still didn't want him around, and he ends up going to a team that had won 0 games the year before. So I watched the Browns play, and I thought Baker Mayfield played well. Should be pointed out that Tyrod Taylor also played well, maybe played better. It didn't throw an incomplete pass. Yet somehow, and we do this as viewing public, we create guys that we like, we create narratives that we like. Baker Mayfield was undervalued, underrated coming out of high school. He was, in fact, a walk-on at Texas Tech, although he did have opportunities to be a Division I football player at other places. He chose to walk on. He did the same at Oklahoma. But he wasn't undervalued in the National Football League. If anything, he might have been overvalued, might have been overrated. He was the number one overall pick. Of any player you could pick, he went first. So it's just amazing to me on how we consider him an underdog. A competitor thought to have little chance of winning a fight or contest, as opposed to Tyrod Taylor, who's smaller, bounced around from Baltimore to Buffalo, now to Cleveland, and really has essentially no chance of holding off Baker Mayfield, no matter how well he plays. Think about that for a second. what you call an underdog and what actually is an underdog. In this fight, Tyrod Taylor's the underdog. Baker Mayfield is the favorite. There's no other way to look at it. Even if your mind wants to tell you watching Baker Mayfield scramble around makes you think of the fact that he was a walk-on at Tech and lost his starting job and then a walk-on at Oklahoma and then won the starting job and then eventually won the Heisman Trophy. If you actually know the definition of a word, Tyrod Taylor, by definition, by any definition, is the underdog in that quarterback competition. They drafted Baker Mayfield number one. When you draft a guy number one overall, the reason that you can't miss is because he is going to play. Period, stop, end of story. He is going to play. He has to succeed. You have to win with him. And if you don't believe me, in Cleveland, it's just different team. Number one, you can even miss on two. You can miss on three. You can't miss on one. Anthony Bennett was the number one overall pick with the Cleveland Cavaliers. And in that draft, Victor Oladipo, probably the best of those top five, top 10 guys. It wasn't just that they missed on Anthony Bennett, who's not in the NBA anymore. It's that they missed on the number one overall pick. They could have picked anybody, and they picked a guy that couldn't even stick in the league. Baker Mayfield has to succeed. And look, John Dorsey probably doesn't even want to play him. He comes from Kansas City, where they drafted Pat Mahomes last year. Played him in the preseason, and he played great. Sat him the whole regular season. Plays him week 17. And then eventually bids adieu to Alex Smith. I'm sure that's what he wants to do. But Pat Mahomes was drafted 10th. There's a huge gap between being drafted 10th and being drafted first overall for a team that's won one game combined in the past 2 years. Baker's going to play. Why? Because he's the favorite. Tyrod Taylor's the underdog. That essentially has no shot.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Let's link up with Peter King from NBC Sports. Kind enough to spend some time with us here Monday in The Herd. And Peter, everyone's talking about these rookie quarterbacks. Let's start with Sam Darnold, who, of course, tore it up for the New York Jets. And look, I started by saying no one that I know in football thought their trade was a smart trade. But didn't they luck into getting Sam Darnold, who was many people's number one quarterback prospect, at the third pick?
Well, I don't know, Doug. I mean, I thought that Baker Mayfield was the best quarterback in this crop. And this was a very beauties in the eye of the beholder draft for quarterbacks. There's some people, if you gave them the first pick, they would have taken Josh Allen. Some would have taken Mayfield. Some would have taken Darnold. Maybe some, although I don't know who, would have taken Josh Rosen. And to me, when I look at this quarterback draft, I kind of look at, you look at the history of quarterbacks being drafted. Sam Darnold, it's almost 50-50 whether he's going to succeed or fail. And so many of the factors are beyond his control. So I don't look at this and say, man, the Jets got lucky in getting Darnold. You might look at it in 5 years and say, oh, my God, the Jets blew it by not taking Josh Allen.
Let me ask you about these rookie quarterbacks. Who's the most likely to start the soonest?
Oh, my gut feeling is probably Josh Allen. He seems to have the clearest path to starterdom in Buffalo. But I think Darnold, if Darnold's the best guy, especially in the third preseason game, I think he's got a very good chance to start. The thing I like about Allen early on is that, you know, I was in their camp and I talked to general manager Brandon Bean, and he goes, because he knows that everybody thinks, hey, take your time with Josh Allen. He played at Wyoming, was not an accurate guy. Make sure he is all there before you use him. And he doesn't feel that way at all. He said, we are playing the best guy to win opening day. So, you know, that's a little bit of a different attitude than you have in Cleveland and, quite frankly, you have in Arizona right now with Josh Rosen.
All right, let's go to Cleveland because they are interesting. You have John Dorsey, who comes from Kansas City. Peter King joining us from NBC Sports. Doug Gottlieb in for Colin here on The Herd on Fox Sports Radio and Fox Sports One. So Dorsey comes over from Kansas City, where couldn't have worked out any better for them, right? Get to the playoffs with Alex Smith. Mahomes plays the preseason, plays week 17. He's now the guy. 1 year later, he redshirted essentially a season. He's ready to go. I think that's what Dorsey would like to do. And he has Tyrod Taylor, who led the Bills to the playoffs even after they benched him. But it's different when you have Baker. Baker seems to be ready to play. You said you thought he was the best quarterback of the class. And he's the number one overall pick, and they need hope in Cleveland. What do you think Cleveland ultimately does?
They start Tyrod Taylor opening day, and then as the season goes on, they just see, A, if Mayfield is ready. He's a precocious guy. And see if he's ready. And then I think the other part of this is, you know, so 2 weeks ago today, I'm in Browns camp, and I ask Hugh Jackson about Mayfield, and I didn't even say, so are you sticking with your decision? He just volunteered this. He goes, Peter, I am not changing my mind on the quarterback. Tyrod Taylor is starting, and someday Baker Mayfield is going to thank me for this. And, you know, Doug, I go back to 2003 and look at the redshirt year that Carson Palmer had. And Carson Palmer really was the better for that, even coming out of USC. So I think the majority of this season, as my gut feeling, Baker Mayfield will not be the quarterback of the Cleveland Browns.
Okay, will Dez Bryant be a wide receiver for the Cleveland Browns?
Boy, when I was there, people really poo-pooed that to me. I guess I would just ask this question. Do you want to bring an incendiary guy into a place that is essentially you're trying to get the chemistry right, you're trying to get it right? You know, I'm in Oxnard today at the Cowboys. I think the Cowboys would tell you that, you know, at times this was an explosive guy as much off the field as on. And he was not a great player the last 2 years. I don't think it'd be a terrible move for the Browns to do that, but I certainly don't think it's a fait accompli.
You mentioned that you're in Cowboys camp. I was up there about a week ago. And the thing that struck me is, one, how the kind of the younger group had now kind of taken over. The old guard, for the most part, is gone, which leads a little bit of a leadership void. Even if Dak is the leader, he's not as vocal leader as some in the past. But I looked at that wide receiver core. You lose Witten, you lose Dez, and there really is no number one. There's a bunch of twos and threes. And I get that they feel like, hey, we're gonna make you have to load up to stop Zeke, and that's gonna create one-on-one. But do they have the weapons to create space for Dak to be able to put balls into windows? He's not crazy accurate. He wasn't throwing guys open last year, and it doesn't feel like they have guys that demand a double team. I guess I'm wondering your thoughts on that wide receiving core and combined with the tight end core.
This place reminds me an awful lot of San Francisco. I was at the 49ers yesterday. You know, you've got one guy in the tight end and wide receiver core, Marquise Goodwin, who I think can be probably a special player. And other than that, you have got to find these guys. You've got to invent these guys. And that's why I think the Jason Witten loss here is a significant loss. And I'm not saying they don't have guys to replace him, but I think, Doug, in a time like this, now we're going to see how good a teaching staff Jason Garrett has assembled. I think that's vitally important for the 2018 Cowboys, not only to get your quarterback back on track, and make sure he's more like 2017 than or 16 than he was 17, but to basically make sure that all of these guys in your receiving core and at tight end, you know, get on the same page and get good chemistry with Dak Prescott from opening day on.
Odd Shark has the Packers as the most likely destination after October for Khalil Mack. He's still not in camp with the Raiders. There was limited, if any, communication between he and John Gruden up to this point. What's your feel on how that goes down in Oakland?
I can't believe that Mark Davis would either approve of the trade of Khalil Mack or trade him himself. That would be a nightmare scenario. You do not trade a potential Hall of Fame pass rusher as he enters his prime. You've got to pay him, period. The cap keeps going up, and you've got to be able to do business in this league. If you admit fail, if you trade Khalil Mack, in my opinion, you're admitting that you can't do business in the modern NFL. And if you can't do that, in my opinion, then Mark Davis should get a partner a deep pocketed partner who's going to help him with things like the signing bonus for guys you have to get paid.
Publicly, the new helmet rule, the new contact rule with the top, with the crown of the helmet, is being panned. People don't like it. There's flags everywhere, and you almost feel like you watch the Cardinals game against the Chargers. You can't even make a legal tackle anymore. Privately, what are NFL people saying about how this rule is being used?
I ran into Jaquaski Tart, a hard-hitting safety for the 49ers yesterday at 49er camp, and I was talking to him about it, and he goes, and this is cliche, but I can tell you a lot of defensive players feel this way. He said, looks like it's turning into flag football or two-hand touch. And I think a lot of people fear that. Doug, I think this is a good and admirable attempt by the NFL. I really, really do. I think it has to be done. I think you have to say to the moms and dads of America, send your kids to play football. We're going to make it safe, or as safe as we can make it. Do I think it's going to have some debacle-type effects? Absolutely, unequivocally. Do I think they should be doing this? I still do. I might change my mind after 4 or 5 weeks, but this has to be done for the future of the game.
Peter, I could not agree with you more. Let you go with this. Kirk Cousins being called a savior. I look at it, and I think we talk about so many other teams, so many other interesting teams. Here's a team got to the NFC Championship game with arguably their third quarterback and with a backup running back. Now they got Dalvin Cook back, and they got Kirk Cousins, who did a lot with a little in Washington. The Vikings, a team that people should think the most of, even in that NFC North, even with a healthy Aaron Rodgers.
I think they're the best team in the NFC North, but again, we've never seen Kirk Cousins play winning, great football in January. You know, he's got to prove that he can win playoff games and play very well in playoff games. He hasn't done it. I mean, it's easy to make statements in August, and I really like Kirk Cousins for a lot of reasons, in, you know, mostly football ones, but he's got to do it. This is not having to do with liking a guy's personality or commanding the huddle or whatever. You got to play well in January for that contract to be justified.
Peter, great stuff as always. Thanks so much for stepping away from Cowboys camp for a second. I know you got a bunch of interviews to do. We appreciate you being our guest in the herd.
My pleasure, Doug. Thank you.